This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Have major life expenses? Using a credit card can cost you an arm and a leg in interest and fees. Break up with bad credit card debt and check out a SoFi personal loan. With low fixed interest rates and absolutely no fees, a personal loan could be a great way to consolidate your hard-to-pay-off, high-interest credit card debt. A SoFi personal loan can also be used for home improvement projects, weddings, travel, moving costs, emergency expenses, whatever life throws your way, with funding ranging from $5,000 to $100,000. With a single fixed monthly payment and no fees, a SoFi personal loan is simply a smarter way to pay compared to high-interest credit cards. View your rate in 60 seconds without affecting your credit score at SoFi.com/podcast. That's SoFi.com/podcast. And get your money right. Loans originated by SoFi Bank N.A., member FDIC. Terms and conditions apply. NMLS 6968-96891.
This podcast is proudly in association with Pitch Sport Football, the app that allows you to interact with other West Ham fans, pick your starting 11 and participate in fan time videos. This app is absolutely free, so like I've done, like X has done and like thousands of other West Ham fans have done, get this downloaded if you haven't already. That's Pitch Sport Football.
You're listening to the West Ham Way podcast with Dave and X. Oi, oi!
Good evening and welcome to the West Ham Way podcast with myself, Dave Walker, and serial YTK blogger, ex-WHU employee. This week we talked to a man who enjoyed an eventful career as a player, a manager and more recently a pundit. He's competed at the highest level domestically and also represented Northern Ireland with an impressive amount of caps. That man is Ian Dowie, and tonight we're going to focus on his two separate spells at West Ham. X will also be giving us exclusive news and views, so don't go anywhere during what should be a cracking show. And it's great to talk to you tonight. How are you, mate? You well?
Yeah, really good. Thankfully, all family's been good. So, just got out for a game of golf in recent times. But other than that, trying to get out and do a bit of running, which was long overdue, I think. So, getting a bit back to fitness I'd like to have been.
Oh, very good. Yeah, fitness is a bit of an alien word to me, Nick, I'll be honest. and we're also absolutely dog shit at golf, so we got no chance.
No, exactly.
Well, I think my son would say I'm dog shit at golf too.
So. last time I went for a run was when Ian played for West Ham, I think.
Talking of West Ham, Ian, I heard that you grew up as a West Ham fan. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely true. I mean, I was just thinking today about AD Coker and players like that. I mean, I was blessed actually. One of my first managerial jobs was at Oldham, obviously, and one of my assistants was David Cross, so who was a brilliant impersonator, and you know, so I got so, and that was that team really. If you think about, you know, 81, whatever, with John Lyle and Len Kearns as a chairman, you know, Parksy and Ray Stewart and Lamps, and you know, Billy Bonds, who's a bit of my idol at the time. And Crossy played, and Trevor Brooking, of course. So, it, you know, yeah, I spent many time being locked out on a Spurs Boxing Day, not being able to get in. But now, me and Dad, my dad and my brother used to go fitfully. My dad didn't take a lot, but I was a West Ham fan growing up from a very young age. But really, so I remember sort of Aidy Coke and Clyde Best tough times, and then really that cup winning team of is sticks long in the mind. And, you know, the manager and John Lyle, and what a wonderful person he was.
Wow. So did you have any specific heroes that come to mind? I mean, you mentioned Aidy Coke and Bestie there. They were massive for West Ham.
Alan Devonshire was amazing for me in terms of when as a player I thought he was about. And, you know, some other, I remember, you know, at the time, looking back, thinking how long young Paul Allen was in around, who's since become a really good friend of mine. But probably Billy Bonds was the lad I looked up to, because, you know, he played for a long period while I was still a fan. You know, it was the first result I looked for at weekends. And, it was probably Billy was, you know, probably my idol as growing up. And as a result, for him to sign me was amazing.
Well, it's funny because that was going to be our sort of first question. You were signed by Billy Bonds in 1991 to help us get promoted. How did the move come about?
Well, I think I'd heard some bits and pieces, and it came about very quickly. I think we were just, you know, it had gone very well at Luton. There was talk about some changeovers at the top, and the manager was a little bit uncertain, Jimmy Ryan, and he wanted to, I think, maybe just bring a bit of his own blood in, although I played virtually every game, and he'd been great with me, and it came up. I was a West Ham fan, you know, when it came across my door that they'd made a bid and it was been accepted. It was nothing more than just turn up and sign for what I was wanted to. There was hardly any discussion. It wasn't about that in the days. I wanted to play for West Ham. It was my team. And, you know, for Billy Bonds to want to sign me was amazing. And then, you know, when I look at that, you know, when I did sign, going to a dressing room full of good characters, Alvin, Ludo, Gailey, you know, Chrissy Hughton, Ian Bishop, Frank. And then, you know, the likes of top players, you know, really, really top players. And I knew Jimmy Quinn anyway by that time. And, you know, he was also an outstanding player. Timmy Breaker was there as well. So, it was, I mean, it wouldn't have mattered what we offered me. I would have signed anyway. So, in the end, it was great. And, you know, fortunately enough, we got promoted that year, which is, was fantastic. And, you know, to do that, you know, to be part of it was amazing. So, you know, whatever happens, that's something that I really enjoyed. You know, the celebrations I remember to this day. It was special people. And, you know, you look about centre forwards there at the time, or forwards, Frankie and, you know, Trevor Morley and Jimmy Quinn, good players, and you have Stuart Slater and the likes and other people like that. So it's, you know, it was a really good thing, and I had, you know, everything. I couldn't wait for the season to start, really, if I'm honest.
I can imagine. I mean, you know, having conversations like this from a fan's perspective is just a little reminder of just how good that squad was back then. I mean, some of the names you're reeling off, some great players and some great names there. And obviously sitting at the top of those boys at the time was Billy. I mean, you mentioned earlier on he was one of your heroes. When you signed for West Ham, was that the first time you met him? And what was your impression of him when you did?
Yeah, it wasn't the first time I met him. I mean, listen, also, Dixie was making it. It's at that time you think about how good some of them players were. And Julian Greg went on to become a good friend of Dixie's, and outstanding talent. Billy, it was the first time I met him. He was straightforward, honest, understood what I was about. I think he thought that a little bit of what he had, I had in terms of work ethic, and, you know, I think that's fair. He was obviously probably a lot better player than I was, let's be honest, but certainly for West Ham by a long chalk. But Billy was excellent, straightforward with me, and I never had any issues with him. And even to this day, I've, in the end, I understood fully why he did what he did. At the time, I was flummoxed. But you know, that's what managers have to do. Now I realise that at the time, of course, being a West Ham fan, and, you know, when Billy pulled me pre-season, I think we were at Southend, and said that Southampton made an offer and that had been accepted, I just flatly said I don't want to go. And, you know, in the end, the scenario was, if I didn't go, I wasn't going to play. And that was that. That sounds like that's bad. That's not. That's just the era it was. Billy was top draw at the end of the season. Actually, when they went down, I think I scored the goal against them. Would you believe it? Down at Southampton's ground, and, you know, he was the first one to come up to me and said, "Oh, well, I played." So, he, you know, it was. it was something I certainly didn't want to happen. But in the end, things happened for a reason. And I remember speaking to my wife and saying, I don't know if there's any way out of this. I don't want to go down to Southampton. My wife was down from the South Coast, so it wasn't so bad. But I didn't want to leave West Ham. We were very settled where we are. And I just said, it's really been sort of a fait accompli. I have to leave or I'm not going to play. So in the end, I left. And, that's just a very sad moment. And lucky enough, I got to come back. But I've got nothing but the utmost respect for Billy because I understand what managers have to go through.
I mean, let's skip forward now, Ian, to 1995.
Yeah.
And you get another crack at West Ham. I mean, I'm sure it might not have been a move that you were expecting, but it came at a time when we had a new manager. How had that changed for you? And did the club feel any different when you did re-sign? And how did it come around that you played for West Ham again?
When I think about, it was a difficult time in that period at Palace. You know, we'd gone down. I started to see him grow. I got a couple of goals in the early part of the season. And there were some rumblings behind it. You know, there was a bit of interest from a couple of clubs. And then West Ham popped up and Harry, and the chairman was Terry Brown by the time. He was also a lovely fellow like Martin Cairns, were both gentlemen as chairman as I remember. And then happened very quickly. Again, you know, as often happens with Tata, there was some bit of furore about the team, about me leaving. And I've got to say, good players there, you know, Chris Coleman, Gareth Southgate, and a good team, but you're just starting to break up a little bit. And I got to choose to go to West Ham and play at the top level again. And why wouldn't I? And was it the same? No, it was different because there's different players. You know, Tony Cotty was back, you know, Johnny Moncur, good character. Marcus Hughes on loan was outstanding. You know, Dimitrescu, Slaven Bilic, top draw player. Rio Ferdinand coming through was the best 17-year-old I've ever seen. And very, very, very closely followed by Frank Lampard, I might say. And the likes of Danny and Robbie Slater, as well as all the other lads that knew that were there. So a lot of the still lads that I'd left the club were still there. But, you know, that was a key element to it. You know, and I think, Harry was in an infectious way. And, it was good. And I've really enjoyed the first year. Enjoyed it all. I had a fabulous time forever. Little problem with in the second season with that own goal, but that's what, you know, it's the only place to get a stand ovation as a Stockport. So, in the end, I wouldn't change any of that, and even breaking a leg on the same day of that game. But my team was West Ham. I'd never go. You'd never hear me say if I played with, I don't know, if I'd have signed for Man United for 10 years, West Ham was my team.
Yeah, well, I totally, you know, love and respect your feelings towards West Ham. And to be honest, and I'm only speaking personally now, I'm sure X knew, I didn't actually know that you were a West Ham fan and grew up as a West Ham fan.
That's why I write the questions, mate.
You see how the dynamic works quite well here.
Yeah,
But in all seriousness, Ian, despite that, you were, and again, I admire your honesty in terms of how you felt at the end of that first spell at West Ham, because of that and any bitterness you might have been harbouring, was you tempted to turn West Ham?
No, never even crossed my mind. I mean, listen, really? There's a couple of other clubs that, you know, I wouldn't want to mention now because I've met the manager and blah, 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 but nothing, it just felt right. Of course, I'd love to score a bucket more goals than I did in bits and pieces, but, you know, that's not the way it's going to be or the way it was. And, you know, I had a good spell at Southampton. You know, Palace went well for me. It just, you know, it was my team. So, you know, and West Ham, we still have that magnificent ground that I love to go to. So for me, it was, I didn't even think twice about it.
Well, one honour that you must have been pleased with is in your first season, you were runner-up in Hammer of the Year behind Julian Dix. Now, obviously, that's an award voted for by the fans. So to come second to, you know, an absolute icon at West Ham, I guess as a West Ham fan, that must have been a real honour.
And do you know what, Ian, just quickly as well, just to jump on the back of that, I think so far you've genuinely done yourself a real disservice with your time at West Ham. And I think, you know, X's question about, runner-up as Hammer of the Year, that's a testament to that, and it's contradictory to, I think, how you saw yourself at West Ham. So I hope you do appreciate that West Ham fans do remember you fondly.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, I remember them calling me Bartman, which I've got to say went down. Listen, it was appropriate probably, but you know, my view is it's a Dixie. Me and Dixie had a couple of little moments early on in our first spell at the club, where we, as you can imagine, seen eye to eye in a training session once or twice. Nothing major, but we became really good friends. And he was, I mean, his left foot was something special, and a leader in the way he played. It wasn't, you know, don't expect Dixie to run around with it. And also with his knee, isn't he? You know, the way he played at game time, he came alive. And Mick got on great. He had the ultimate respect for the way I went about the game in terms of on match days. And we got on great. So he was brilliant that year, absolutely brilliant. As were a couple of other players. I think Bish had a really good year. And, you know, it's, I think Mark Reaper might have done quite well that year, as I remember. I think that all might have been, I think it was Mark Reaper that year. Anyway, he I think he went on to Celtic a bit later. But yeah, there's a lot of good players in there. But Julian had left foot you could do anything with. I mean, for a lad whose knee was virtually had a hole in it like the Blackwall Tunnel, you know what I mean? He's a bit like a John Sheridan who I managed later on for the level he played at, for what his injuries were. And he was tough, relentless, very, very cutting. I mean, listen, if you didn't have a riposte to him, you know, he'd carry on doing it. Lucky enough, I had a few words to say to him. So he took it well. And then, I have to go to Northern Ireland in a summer trip. Like we would go there playing golf and a few beers in downtime. And I took Dixie there and he had a riot and the lads loved him. I took him on a few bit of the trips around Belfast and he certainly enjoyed himself. I wouldn't have never thought that, you know. But when the Julian you see off the field is certainly a different fella.
Absolutely. And let's talk about a few more players off the pitch, more interestingly, because I think the fans know about them on the pitch. But the following year, we brought in a number of foreign forwards, including Paolo Futre and Radichoy. What were your initial impressions of them coming into the dressing room?
Well, I mean, listen, as a study of football, you know, Paolo Futre was one of the elite. And even in training, he had, I don't know how they call it, flick that. He had one where he flicked inside and outside. He had that trick.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Like you could not believe. And you know, Florian Radichoy, who was much quieter, much more serene, went about his business, but looked technically, looked very sharp, looked pacey. You know, so I think, unlike a lot of lads there, you know, I'd sort of come into football a different way from behind, so I'd have been late in it. I could understand coming, you know, not speaking the language. It's just a real barrier, you know. You need help, and so you don't expect them to start well. And we try to give them as much chance as we can. The lads did, but you know, Florian, I think he didn't. He had a great start. I think he started well. I think he might have scored against Man United, and then sort of drifted away. But he wasn't a good player because he was in training. He looked really good, but Paolo Futre looked the real deal. And thinking he gives you something, I don't know. Maybe like, you know, he's just that good. Like a Paolo Di Canio would have gone in his day, you know. He gives you something that, you know, someone else can't do. He had that ability. And well, it looked really good. And then we obviously got to Arsenal. And I was,
Well, that's the next question. What actually happened at Arsenal?
Well, listen, it's exactly true what you say. Listen, he walked in. And I don't think Harry did, but anyway, he was only impressed he'd get the number 14 shirt, and it was John Moncur's, I think, or 10. Was it 10?
10, yeah. 10.
Anyway, 10. John Moncur was a 10. Anyway, by the way, the only person to benefit out of that was John Moncur, who got 3 weeks in his villa in Portugal.
Yeah.
So, but listen, Monkey was a good lad. And I've got to say, I remember, I think it was Harry went into the discussion in his office with Frank Burrows, I believe. And you couldn't have written it, but he did. He wasn't a player, and so because he wasn't ever the number 10. Now, you know, I think his view, and that's all I heard, was that he'd said the number 10 had been agreed. Now, a Monkey would have definitely given, I'm sure, passed it over, and maybe wouldn't have wanted to, but he would have done. But you know, we got beat 2-0, by the way. But it just was. I mean, there's no way back, really, for what was a great player. And I've got to say, that is something I regret, because I'd love to have seen him play. Oh, he could have been, he looked tremendous. All right, in years were going on, but he still had that trick. And I, you know, don't forget, in them days, there weren't a load of tricks done. You know, it wasn't, you know, there was sort of some brilliant people, but, you know, Palafuce, you know, and you think about Porfirio, who did okay, and Barocho, he played 11 or 12. Hugo played about 23. No, it's just a sadness lots of ways, you know. But I've got to say, I think when Paolo looked back at that, what would he think? He would think, not for me to say. I mean, of course, numbers are much more important, maybe in other countries, and he's a notorious number 10. But you know, when you're there, you play the game. I'd carry. Listen, he pulled. If there had been a conversation with Paul Harry, say, I'm playing this today, can I get the change? Or maybe you can't change your number. I think that was a problem. You can't change your number during the season. So anyway, so, you know, it was disappointing. And I think all the lads were disappointed because he's seen whatever number his shirt was hanging up and he just went, no, not all. And that was it. So,
did it affect the preparations for the rest of the team? Like, you know, obviously, I imagine he was, I think the story is he was due to start up front with you and then Steve Jones had to come in to replace him. I mean, did it disrupt, like, you guys?
No. Listen, Jonesy's a great lad. I think he's still an ambassador of the club, which is great.
Yeah.
You know, he's a great lad, big smile on his face and love the game. Listen, no, did it? Of course it did. Of course it upset them. I mean, you've got Paolo Fuchs, you've got one of the top players has been, you know, in European football, you know, coming to play for West Ham. We're going to Arsenal away, which is not the easiest draw. And it's what it is. And it's just, you know, in lots of ways, I'm sure Harry would think the same. You know, at the time, Harry being a West Ham fan, it's just something you can't not play. But I don't know whether, how he wasn't aware that he wasn't the number 10. So, you know, in the end, that was killed before it started. But Florin, you know, I felt Thoron had something about him. And, you know, you can see by his record that he clearly did. Just a different mentality, maybe a different part of the country. He just found it difficult to... Don't forget, just starting to come out of that. The physical nature of the game was, you know, still very much part of it. And, you know, that's since dwindled away and, you know, not it becomes much more easy on the eye. You know, you see, you know, some of the players that, you know, play to now, you know, they're magnificent on the ball, but you know, if a ball's in the box, they're not going to be. They try and volley it from 10 feet rather than their overhead kick it rather than head it. When I was trying to head it in from about 6 inches off the ground, so you know, my view is it's really sad because actually it was an exciting time. I think it was a great deal of West Ham fans were looking forward to see Paolo and they never did.
Yeah, I know. We enjoyed a very different Paolo years after that,
absolutely.
Thank God. But you're quite right. And you were also quite right earlier when you said that you know this question's coming and that time is now. We've got to look at that cold, rainy night in Stockport.
Yeah.
I know, you know, it happened so quickly and it was instinctively, but, you know, that beautifully disguised finish that you put into the top right-hand corner, was that something you worked on in training? Or?
Well, listen, absolutely. Listen, when I was going through the run, I was, any goal was... I mean, I remember... I was going for a poor run, to be fair. And actually, I remember, I think, just soon after that, I came back and I scored against Wimbledon at home. And it was disallowed. It's sort of, you know, just... Funny, it's just one of them moments. I remember seeing it on the back. It was a perfectly good goal. But... Anyway, the referee disallowed it. The goal at the time, you know, it was, you know, the wet, windy, horrible day, the evening rather. I think it was, you know, 18th of December or something like that. Anyway, and you know, it's just Ludo's fault, really. Ludo should have come and caught it. But, you know, it's what it is. You know, the ball came in the box. I tried to head it, come off the sharp, the sheriff's badge corner and went in the top corner, you know, so nothing you can do about that. When you go, what, 10 minutes later, I'm running through, I flick the ball past the keeper, he makes a save, stops it and just goes by the post and the lad clips in me. I spiral fracture my leg that I didn't know about at the time. About 15 minutes later, I'm still playing on with it, but start the whole one in. The physio called me over and he said, I think you've got a bit of a problem here. And I came off and, you know, it wasn't, and rightly so, wasn't it great because you just walked up beside, we took a big contingent. I wasn't getting the please and thank yous for some of them lads. And the West Ham own goal, you know, I mean, listen, you can you can do many things in your life and never be as recognised as someone who scored an own goal like that. So
I know.
I'll take that one and not set off.
Yeah, no, it's true. But I have to say, from the bottom of our hearts, you know, me and X are sincerely sorry about throwing those coins at you that night. You know, we didn't mean
it. Mate. By the way, they're fake.
That's why we got rid of them.
No, but listen, my view is, listen, that's why I played for West Ham. You know, that's why I went to come back to West Ham. You know, I wanted, West Ham fans are a passionate bunch, and that's what I think, and it's not, you know, not blanket there, but the passion that the ground brought, it's difficult to reinvigorate there. You know, but I understand why people avoid crying. They don't mean to do it, you know. They're the lad in the armchair that's going bananas on the TV. You know, that's what some of, not all of them, some of them are like. And, you know, we all get passionate about it. And that's what you want. You want a ground that's full of passion. You know, my view is, it's me scoring own goal is going to get people angry. So, you know, I get it.
Yeah, of course it is. And for the record, we didn't really throw coins at you.
We can't afford to, mate. We'll be picking them up afterwards. So when you've mentioned some of the players that were brought in at the time, you know, you said Hartson, Kitson and stuff. How does it feel as a striker when the manager is buying in? Obviously, players that are going to compete for your position. Hartson was a club record signing at the time. Kitson was brought in. You know, do you feel... Does it upset you? Does it motivate you? What's your feelings at that time?
No. I mean, you're at a football club, when you bring in good players, it's going to elevate a football club. You know, Johnny's come in, and you know, I'm big friends with him today. You know, he's overcome so much in his life. And me and him were very close. We used to travel a lot. He had bought a place in Brooklands Park, and I helped him. You know, we looked great. You know, I knew the area. You know, he'd been at Luton. You know, and Arsenal, and. You know, he's a good player, by the way. Two really good feet, but incredible in the air, powerful, a handful. And Kitson was razor quick. I mean, it's not too many quicker than razor. And you don't forget, you've got Steve Lomas in around the team by that time. And, you know, I think, you know, Frank Lampard starting to make waves. You know, the side was evolving, and, you know, all I wanted to be was sticking to be part of it, hopefully. You know, in the end, I played a good few games with Johnny Hartson. And he's very, he was saying, he loved playing up front with me. And I understood why that is, because, you know, he like a Matt Letizia, he would pick up knocks downs and smash him in the back of the net. And of course, you know, let's not be stupid. You know that if they're signing two strikers, you're not doing your job. But nonetheless, that was the case. So, you know, you're not going to look at that. But, you know, if you spoke to Slaven Bilic or Junior Dix or whatever and said, you know, we're playing away at Newcastle on Tuesday night, splashing down the rain, who do you want up front? You know, I think they might have said, yeah, well, let's get the big man in the team. So it's what it is. I've always been very self-aware of what I am. I've never been... You know, because I came to the game late, I suppose. I signed Primes was 23, so you're never going to have that base of fantastic technical ability. Because I done it from I was in academies, Southampton Academy, but I missed from 16 onwards. I grew up in men's football, so you know, in terms of that, when I was nine, I was playing in, you know, St Albans, Hartford, that way, in so you know, Cheshire. So it, and what I mean by that is not that I didn't work hard, because at Luton, I worked extremely hard, I was out every afternoon. Every single afternoon, till 3 or 4 in the afternoon, with, you know, on the plastic pitch, learning that. So you work, so you grab that. But it's you know, you've got to understand what you're good at, what you do well, and you know, some of them goals. I mean, I remember scoring one for West Ham. It's, you know, that I've been very proud of. But you know, all I worry about is if you've got the respect of your teammates and the manager. And for the most part, that's what it was.
There's another player at West Ham I want to talk about. It's Samassi Abu. Now, what was he like as a player, as a person? And was it true when he made his debut that the fans were all shouting, Abu? He just didn't know what to make of that.
Yeah, he did. He did. So I was just thinking about, do you know what? If I honestly knew, but it was good for him. He didn't know what he was doing, I don't think. I mean, what I'm saying is, if the ball had come up to him, listen, he wasn't really a back-to-goal type of player. He was, you know, but if the ball plucked up to him or popped around the corner, you know, he took a touch, his ability, his agility, he was pacey. And when he was running with the ball, he's one of them lads, he could, if he hit a ball, hit your knee, hit his knee, it'd fall kindly for him. You know, when he was on the run, he was unpredictable, incredibly unpredictable. Mm. But I think in the end, he became a big fan because, you know, his big smile on his face. And West Ham fans, although they're very critical at times, if you're smiling all the time, you know, I think that half of them, you know, I mean, I certainly enjoyed my time with him. You know, he was a very nice character, really tried hard to get on with the English and did very well at it. I thought there was something in there. I thought he might have gone on to do a lot of really good things. I know injury had a big part in that, but you know, for me, I really enjoyed his company. And he was different. He was off the wall and a bit special. You know, I thought he might go on to do great things. Now, in the end, that's not happened. But nonetheless, I think he brought a lot of smiles. Listen, you can't compare him to Clyde Best or Paolo Futre or you know, but in terms of technical ability. But he brought some. I thought he brought happiness in around the dressing room too. You know, I liked him.
Mm. Eventually, that season, you were sold to QPR. You went there with Keith Rowland in exchange for Trevor Sinclair. Ultimately, how did that make you feel?
Oh, listen, not as strange as I thought was when I walked in the dressing room at QPR and Ray Harford, the manager, said, "You take the forwards." They wanted me to coach the forwards, and they paid $100,000 for both of us, I think. So, in terms of that, so but you know, Ray obviously seen something in me and didn't listen. Harry was very personal with it. It's no issue. Yeah, I wasn't going to, you know, just say you're not getting enough game time, go there and play, which I did. Didn't play a load, but in the end, you know, Ray wasn't there long enough, and which is a shame. But Jerry Francis came in, gave me the assistant manager job, and after a little while, it became a great education for me for a different part of my career. But anytime you walk around a club you love, it's going to hurt. You know, I think it was probably the right time, and maybe it was better. Yeah, in lots of ways. As I said, it was, you know, I can remember carrying my bags the last day. You know, it was upsetting because I got on great with all the people at the training ground, all the girls in the office, and, you know, Spagbol and Friday and all them things, and you know, new people around the place. That not driving in that training ground was a sadness for me because, you know, I loved doing it, loved being at the club I supported. But, you know, what Harry did was right for him at the time and probably right for everyone. So there's nothing to say. No, you know, I don't think it was probably the right time. And you know, in the end, it led to a different part of my career, which, you know, has been very helpful. Harry tried to take me back to be assistant manager with him at Portsmouth when I was at Oldham, and that caused me to end up getting the Oldham job and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, there's lots to be thankful to Harry about and Billy Bonds and, you know, the two managers that I've got great regard for, you know, and one's a legend of a player and one's a very, very successful manager who's done a lot of awful things there and also been a great player at West Ham. So to have had two players that mean a lot to West Ham's career sign you, says all that I did to do. I sit here happy with what I've done. As I said, I would not for 1 minute ever say that I'd have loved to have got another 30 goals at West Ham. That hasn't happened, so I can't rewrite history. We've got to live with that first season being runner-up player of the year. And you know, we didn't really create enough success for West Ham. That's the truth. We should have been better with the players we had. And, you know, there's a lot of that, and some of that's probably the players' fault. A lot of that's the players' fault. You know, it was a different time then. It's not the same time now. It was then. We were a rowdy bunch and liked to party like we all did. So I wouldn't deny any of that. But we had some characters, and we our work ethic was on the training ground was top draw.
Mm.
I mean, you sort of do yourself a disservice in terms of goals you scored for West Ham, because you did get a fair few. I mean, talking about those, and moving on from the one we have talked about, what was your sort of favourite goal for West Ham? Your sort of either your best, like what you think was your best technically goal, or one that maybe meant the most, or both?
You probably get the second one against Man City, I think. I can't remember the first or second one. Anyway, because, you know, Alan Baller got rid of me at Southampton. I mean, left me out of a squad one. I scored the week before, but left me out of a squad. You know, God bless him. Yeah, he's entitled to do it. But, you know, so I celebrated quite robustly in front of him. my view is quite, when I think about it, I mean, listen, obviously, I don't think the goal that got us promoted, but I think I scored. Did I score that goal? I'm sure. Yeah, secure that promotion, yeah. So that's what I'm trying to think. Swindon, was it?
I can't remember.
Yeah, Swindon at home. I think it might have been. I thought it might score at Swindon.
You got four in that first season, I think, which were all important goals, obviously.
Yeah, well, anyway, I think Swindon got us promoted. We're at home, weren't we? I'm sure that got us promoted. If it didn't, then I've got it wrong. But that goal was a decent goal. It's interesting. Just a quick one. When I signed, I played for Oldham in that first start. I played Oldham away on the plastic pitch, okay? And there was dry plastic pitch. Anyway, I slid a ball in, perfectly good goal, just slowed offside anyway. But I'd ripped my leg, okay? And I had third degree burns down the side of my leg. And I had Vulcan, these you know, like, it's like lycra patch, big thick ones that I had to put on to protect these burns. Anyway, I've got to say, I'm playing against Barnsley, my home debut in my time, first signing for the club. And I'm having an absolute shocker. Mm-hmm. I mean, listen, I'm on antibiotics. Anyway, I feel I've got no lead. I've got lead in my legs. I think Billy Bonds must be saying, who have I signed here? This donkey, mm-hmm. He can't move. But his first touch is horrendous. Anyway, sure enough, I think it was Martin. It might have been Tim Breaker. We're going on late in the game. He crosses the ball. Anyway, and I jump and I head it. It hits my shoulder. And it, no one knows. And it loops into the top corner and I get a goal on my home debut. But, you know, another 20 minutes of the tosh that I was at. But, and to be fair, I did have third degree burns, so I had to take antibiotics for a long time. But, you know, if I hadn't come off that game scoring, West Ham fans would be bloody hell, what we've signed here, and been right to. So it just shows you that sometimes, you know, you get a little bit of luck, and it was a luck. It went ahead, it hit your shoulder through the top corner, it gets you going, and then, you know, scoring at Swindon and Newcastle and Blackburn away. It was fantastic to go up that year. And, you know, it's, I say, I would like to have seen what had happened, because I thought that was sort of, you know, that you know, you were telling me I was a bit of an unknown quantity at the time because I'd come from non-league, and, you know, that was a very fruitful period for me. So it's you know, through Luton Town. Who knows? But when Bonzi, as I say, when they got, I think he got relegated the following season, I scored for Southampton against West Ham, and Bonzi pulled me and said, you know, he thought he was outstanding on the day, and congratulations, you deserve it. I got man of the match and bits and pieces, and he just said, listen, you know, this is about money. I needed money to sell. So, and listen, he didn't have to say that. There was no reason for him to say that, and I've got the ultimate regard for him because of that, because, you know, I've been a manager. And that happens, and so he's a legend of a player, and never will I not think he's not a hero of mine, for sure. So it was to be signed by him and Harry was something special, and to play with some of the players I did, and to consider myself a good teammate, and had a laugh, and had a few, and they'll tell a few stories about me, and I've got a few stories about them, and some of them should never be spoken about.
when you think about the best players you played with at West Ham across the two periods, what names instantly come to your mind?
That's a difficult one. Julian Dix.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I love Ian Bishop. I thought he was an outstanding talent. I thought Stuart Slater would go on to do great things. Mm. Tony Cotty, Mark Hughes. I love Steve Lomas. Stavon Bilic was outstanding. Frank Lampard, Rio Ferdinand.
You played with some good players, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Arson. Arson was a real player. Al Berkovic, his peak, was a player, I thought. Ludo.
Yeah,
I don't think you can discount him. You know, he had great characters like Tony. You know, I loved some of the Tony Gales and George Parris's. Stevie Potts was pretty impressive for me when I was there that first time. You know, band, you know, Chris Hughes. Yeah, Frankie Mack was decent. And Trevor, you know, although he's same position, like Trevor Morley was a handful. And, you know, you even think about Tim Raker as a right back energy and thing. But, yeah, we, you know, I think Ludo would certainly be in that top five or six players. Tony would be up there. Tony Cotty, no doubt, you know, given coming back the second time. But, you know, John Moncur, second time I got there, really talented lad, great character around the place. But, you know, Bilic and Ferdinand, Lampard, takes a bit, you know, you think about playing with them players. You know, and Rio was both young, Slaven Bilic by no means was. There was some talent there, for sure.
Speaking of Slaven, could you have predicted at the time he would go on to be a successful manager of West Ham, with obviously Julian Dix as his assistant? Did he give you that indication he had that within him?
Yeah, very thoughtful. I mean, listen, if you'd get over the 16 espressos before training, it'd be fine. he's high energy. He's on his mind all the time. You can see that. He's very much like me. He thinks and dreams football. You know, I've been that. So he looks like he's in great position now. And Dix is part of his team at West Brom. I'm not sure he did a lot wrong at West Ham. Talk about money, whatever. I think it was a good fit. I think they maybe got the right man now who's vastly experienced. I think it's about, you know, and your podcast, The West Ham Way, there is some delusions in that in terms of you can only play that way to certain, if you've got the players to play that. And, Harold's back to some eras where, with all due respect, some of them players at that time were the top draw in any generation. So, I think I've got a great deal of regard for Slaven, David Moyes. I think it was a right fit and seemed to get him going. So it's going to be fascinating to see when it all resumes. But I've got nothing, you can't do what you did at Everton in difficult times as long as he has. And I think that's been undervalued. I think it's been undervalued.
I mean, you went on to become a manager yourself. And yeah. In 2003, your Crystal Palace side beat a West Ham side. What do you remember from that day?
Well, a lot. I mean, we had these T-shirts called Jim Corbett had this thing, One More Round. Listen, we were at Oldham. So we had this T-shirt, won them all year. Anyway, and then I turned up the semi-final to watch them. And they came out with these T-shirts on saying, more than just a football club. Spelt with Bobby Moore. And then the final, they came out, same again, with T-shirts on saying the original academy or something. Anyway, we bowled up in our tracksuits as we were. And, it was West Ham. I mean, everyone's thinking it's West Ham. It's what it is. But we were diligent. I think it was Alan Pardew. I think he took a couple of forwards off, Marlon Harewood, I think Connolly, I think, and that 1-0 down, and then brought on Brian Dean, which I thought they might do, and I made a change immediately, actually bringing the down power off the bench. I always knew I'd do it, and they were all laughing at me, little coaches. So I said, listen, I'll do it, I know I'm going to do it. You just haven't got anyone because Dino's a handful. Anyway, we were better in the first half. You had West Ham were better in the second half, no doubt. But we were resilient. There's a few scrapes in the tunnel at half-time, which you may be aware of, but that suited us more than West Ham, I think. There's nothing nicer when you go upstairs and you're in there and, Sir Trevor Brookin says, thoroughly deserved, well, very organised, very disciplined performance, well done. Everyone can quite hark back to the penalty. I still look at it now, I don't think it's a penalty. At that time, but, West Ham should have gone up. They had an incredible squad, but we were on a roll, and it just, we had a bit of belief, and we had, Margaret Hughes at the heart of what we did. We had good players in good positions, Danny Butterfield, you know, right back who I took off late in the game and mixed him with, changed him, Darren Palmer put Mikel Edge right back. It's just something, there have been things coming to your mind, Aki Rila and Mick McHughes in midfield. We didn't have Julian Gray in the final, which was a big blow to us, but you know, Routledge, and we had the two up front in Shipley and Andy Johnson, who were a handful, who were a real handful. And Andy went on to great things, and Neil was magnificent for me. No other words, but a magnificent character around the place as well. And it's surreal because it's my team. So, but when you're in battle, you're in battle. And I think there was a slight arrogance about West Ham, if I'm honest, strutting up and doing being a bit what it was, and it was a foregone conclusion. But yes, that's on the wall, and it was really nice to win the game. But obviously, you know, in lots of ways, you're saddened because it's not your team getting in the Premier League. But it was a team I was managing at the time, and the only time I really experienced that before was when I came down with Oldham. I think we beat you 1-0 in a cup. Anyway, I think it's Carlo Corazon scored the goal. So it's, you can never get a team you support as a boy. It's always very difficult, but when you're in, you know, you're managing that level, and I've been there a long time, you know, well, not a long 6 months I've been there, but we'd had a brilliant reaction from the players. They've been magnificent, and no one deserves any more credit than the players, but absolutely superb. For that bunch to be fourth bottom when I got there and win 18 out of 26.
It's amazing.
Typically, you wouldn't have been in the playoffs if West Ham hadn't scored the...
Oh, no, yeah. Brian Dean scored?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right, absolutely, because Wigan away, wouldn't it?
That's right, yeah, typical West Ham. Always, yeah.
Well,
like
anyway, it does look like it's typical West Ham, but, you know, you're thinking of the team to get in the playoffs. That was a great opportunity. Now they've got them, you know, West Ham was supposed to be in the top two anyway, weren't they? So, you know, the pressure was all on them, but you know, you know, and I know Palace is a really well-supported club. And like my playing career at West Ham, the brief time I played at Crystal Palace, I had a really good time. Very passionate fans. In fact, very similar fans in lots of ways for me. Very unbelievably passionate. And, you know, they're both proper. And, you know, that little corner that they have at Selhurst Park is still quite special, you know. And as you know, when you go there, it's never an easy place to go. No one likes going to the ground. I understand that, you know. We all like to go to better grounds, but there is something about them old-fashioned grounds, like an Everton, like a Palace. You hunker back, but a little bit you hunker back to what was a, you know, that you get that. Like when I was to control one in front of the chicken run, there'd be vitriol coming out of someone's eyes, wouldn't there? The chicken run, they're looking at you, and you know, people were either intimidated by that, or that, you know, made you realise how much passion there was. You know, it's a special football club, and it'll always be West Ham. Will always be my club, and you know, I nothing would give me greater pleasure than to be get this season out of the way, stay up, and go and shoot next season, and get them players who've got some outstanding players, and get them rattling goals in, and let's get them up in the top half.
Mm. So. Did you ever come close to managing West Ham yourself? And sort of wrap it into one question, do you have any plans to come back to management at all?
Listen, will I manage this? I would. I mean, I've done a couple of little bits where I go out and I sort of do it with Alan, you know, sort of, if you like, rescue cases, trying to go 8 games to go and try and do things. It's not really a way to go. But yeah, I'd love it. I've been a pro licence. You know, my championship career is very good and in the CV. Would I manage? Yes, of course I would. Would I coach? Yes, of course I would. But it's got to be the right one now. Would I love to manage West Ham? Would I love to? Of course I'd love to. I'd love to be involved in managing you.
Did you ever get close to it at all?
No, never.
Okay, no. Well, fair enough.
As you know, if it had been, I'd have taken it.
So, yeah, exactly, yeah.
So it sounds that you would certainly be open to getting yourself back into football, but what do you think the future will hold for you realistically? Are you going to push for that, or are you happy doing the punditry?
I've loved coaching. I've tried some different things outside football. Yeah, I still do the army team once a year generally, and love doing that. And I keep up with it. I watch games galore. You know, I'm now looking at German league, and also what you've got to be careful of is I look at teams and thinking how exciting football's to watch now, but how done, no one hardly defends anymore. You know, like, why can't I use Liverpool? Because, all right, last year weren't maybe as good defensive as the season before, though. Or, you know, and they're going to win this league without doubt. But, you know, we've got one of the best defenders in the world because, you know, he's a Rio Ferdinand and maybe even more. That's not Chris and Rio. That's just me saying he's got a lot more to do. But he certainly looks like he's going to go on and be one of the great defenders in the world. You know, I think being a good defensive side is very important. And I think no one should underestimate that. So, yeah, of course, we want to play eye-watering football. And no one did that more than I tried to do when I managed. But if you can score in two and concede in three, you've got a problem. And I think even at times, and so I think what David's done quite well is he's realised they have to be a bit more resolute and a bit more compact. And that requires hard work. And, you know, people like the Nobes isn't like that, you know, and the Declan Rice can bring a bit of that to the team. It's important.
Ian, thanks so much for coming on, mate. We've really enjoyed chatting to you. It really has been an absolute pleasure. And best of luck to you for the future, pal. Whichever
Cheers, pal. Take care.
Thank you, mate. You look after yourself. All the best. Bye.
Viator is the world's leading travel experience marketplace, offering everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. Extensive options, ease of selection, and flexibility at your fingertips help make sure your time is wonderfully spent. Viator is the place to go to book experiences that will create long-lasting moments that make lifetime memories. And Viator has over 300,000 bookable experiences to choose from in over 190 countries. In fact, just last year, Viator helped my family put together this amazing adventure on the island of Kona, swimming with the manta rays, trying to avoid the barracudas, whatever your wildest dreams. If you can imagine it, Viator probably has an experience just for you. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in Viator's world of wonderful experiences. Viator, one site, over 300,000 experiences you'll remember. X is the man in the know. Keeps you informed on rain or snow. His opinion is in demand. There ain't another ITK that I can stand. Right, mate, what have you got for us?
Well, the players have been back in training this week and they're looking to start full contact training soon. But I don't know if you've seen, but a few more players have tested positive for coronavirus now, not at West Ham, but in the Football League. So who knows really where this is going to end up going forward. I think ideally West Ham want the season cancelled, as I've said before, but it's becoming more obvious that I think we are going to have to play our games. There's a massive, massive financial loss from broadcasters if we don't. And I think, unfortunately, that dictates football now. They could decide the season or an average points per game system. And I can't remember which way round it is, but one of them sees West Ham stay up, but the other one sees us actually be relegated and Bournemouth staying up. So who knows? But even if they opt for something like that, there's going to be so much legal consequences, I think, that it's all just a bit of a mess at the moment. But I said, so the club have been putting pictures on the website of the players back in training. And if you have an eye for a story, you would have seen that there's a few players that were missing from those photos and a few people that were in those photos that perhaps wouldn't have been if the season was like as it was. So they're back in time to play games again. So let's start with the negative news as such. So at the moment, both Cresswell and Ogbonna, now I don't know how you sustain an injury in lockdown, but are unable to train at the moment. So I don't know exactly. I think Cresswell has been doing a few days here and there, but he's not fully fit, as is Ogbonna. Ogbonna's not even. So I think that's a bit of a worry. I don't know what their injuries are as such, but hopefully if the season does resume, they'll be fit. Antonio's not been training either, but that's because he is on compassionate leave, because I believe his father sadly passed away. And yeah, and the other player that you wouldn't have noticed was Ajeti, but apparently Ajeti has been training. So
a player that you wouldn't have noticed.
Yeah, exactly.
That's about right, to be fair.
Well, I don't think they even took a photo of him, to be fair, mate.
So they didn't know who he was, that's
no,
why.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. so that was, so that he is training, but it's Cresswell and Bonner, there's a few doubts over, and as I said, Antonio's personal circumstances. But the good news is that Wilshire, Yarmolenko, Fredericks, and Ben Johnson are all available to play, and Xander Silva as well. So those players would have possibly been out of contention had the season not been, you know, continuing to now. All of them are fit, which gives us some options from when we last played back at that Arsenal game, if you remember, mate, that me and you went to.
Yeah.
That was the last game that we actually watched of West Ham. But yeah, I don't know if that seems a long time ago or quite recent. I can't really decide.
Yeah, quite a long time ago for me.
Is it? Yeah, see, I don't know how I feel about missing football at the moment, but that's another story. Like, but yeah, that's something to discuss another time. But in terms of signing players, as I keep saying on this podcast and as I say on my Twitter and so on, the only players we are going to sign are when we know what division we're in. We don't know what division we're in, so we aren't linked with anyone. Yes, we can scout players and we can draw up a list. But those lists and those players that we are going to sign vary hugely on obviously what division we're in. So any speculation about signings isn't going to be with much substance. In terms of contracts now, I broke the story on the show. I think this might have been the last time I was at your house, actually, mate. And Ngakia hasn't signed a new contract. He's been offered one, and he hasn't signed it yet. The situation is pretty much as it was then at the start of May or whatever it was. He hasn't signed that contract, but it's there. Now, they are getting closer to meeting, but the thing is, they don't. The club, West Ham, are very conscious of offering too much to young players because there's been certain players like Reece Oxford and Hak Sabanovic and so on that have probably got a contract that they weren't deserving of. And the club is very strict, I guess, what they offer young players. They have offered him a games-based deal. So if he plays a certain amount of games, it goes up a certain amount and so on. I don't like to disclose the actual figures because...
Do you know the actual figures?
I do, yeah. They're not the figures that are being reported in the paper. I mean, the papers say that he's asking for 20 grand. He's not. He's not asking for 20 grand. He's asking for a much lower basic range. I mean, with bonuses...
Half?
Less than half, I would say. But
right. And in comparison to what the club are offering... Can you give us an indication?
They're probably about a significant amount away at the moment, but I think West Ham always do this. Now, if you think they did it with Declan, they did it with Conor Coventry, they did it with Hamadou Diallo, they did it with numerous young players, they kind of haggle for a long time until it looks like the player's going to leave. Now, Jeremy Ngakia can walk away from the club, I think, at the end of June. So they need to try and get his contract sorted before then. And I think he wants to stay, I believe. I think he obviously is getting pressures from his agent that are saying you need to secure yourself a decent deal because you played four times. I know it doesn't sound much, but four times in the Premier League, twice against Liverpool. You've done well. You're going to be pushing for right back spot next year. And I think he's been advised by his agents that, I mean, there's a lot of agents trying to get into his head at the moment, a young player. And I think, you know, they're advising him perhaps that he's worth more. And the club are trying to be more cautious about that, but I would like to think that they will get to some point soon. I don't know why this story hit the headlines like it did a week or so ago, I think it was about a week ago, because the story hasn't changed from what it was a month or so ago. Yes, the offers of West Ham have got slightly higher and he's rejected it still, but it's still in deadlock as it was before. Now, there are other young players who are getting close to leaving as well. Now, there's a midfielder called Benito Bacca Beatti. He's very, very highly rated. I was asked to, I won't name too many names, but I was asked to support a journalist who was writing an article about up-and-coming players, young players from each club, and I put this guy's name to him, but he went with some of the more known players that I also mentioned to him. But this guy is a really, really talented individual. The only problem is he has the same contract, the same agent as guess who you wouldn't want one of our academy players to have.
What, Reece Oxford?
Yeah, he's got the same agent as Reece Oxford. AD Ward, his name is. And so already he's doing what he did with Reece Oxford. So articles are appearing in the papers about Bayern Munich and various other clubs of that stature being interested in him. And he's now getting his head turned and also probably seeing what's happening to Jeremy, who I think he sort of gets on really well with, and probably thinking they're going to try and, you know, they're not going to give me a contract that I deserve when I'm ready to play in the first team. And I think, you know, you can look at this two ways. You can look at it from the club's point of view, and you could argue that they're right to do this because these players haven't proved themselves in the first team. So why should they earn a big contract? Or you could argue it from the player's point of view that eventually these players are going to be worth a lot of money and they've got other clubs that are interested in them, and do West Ham offer perhaps too little to what their potential suggests they should? And it depends which way you look at it. What I find quite surprising at times is that I would say the majority of our fan base now, or certainly when football stocks were anti the board, if not, you know, like had their concerns if they weren't completely anti. But when it comes to a player and a contract situation like this, they always tend to say the player's being greedy rather than the club are offering the right amount of money, which I find a little bit interesting, because if it was that we were going to sign a player, they tend to say, oh, go on, just pay the money. Why do we always, you know, dally around and not sign the players we should? Yet then when it comes to a young player and they were signing a contract, they seem to think that the player's being greedy. So it's interesting to sort of see the difference, because let's put it this way. Had Jeremy Ngakia came in for Spurs, let's say, or Arsenal or whatever, and played four very good games at right back, and then West Ham were linked with signing him, but then refused to pay a certain amount of money to sign him for his wages, fans would probably be annoyed with the board, wouldn't they?
Well, I find this really interesting, because with this story, I have seen both sides. I think you're quite right. The majority I've seen on social media have very much been in support of the club. And I think they're casting their minds back to Reece Oxford. I think that's the kind of go-to default shit show situation that the club are obviously thinking about and the fans are thinking about. But the reason I've reserved my judgment and I haven't commented on this yet is because I didn't know definitively what Jeremy's asking for, which to me is key. I think you've given me an idea. I don't know if you could be more specific.
Well, I'll put it into this context, right? I don't know exact figures. I don't want to do an injustice to certain players by comparing them. But I think if you was to rank West Ham, say under 23s that are like, you know, the more well-known ones. So if you're talking about like, let's not put Declan in it, because obviously Declan's now on a first-team wage. But if you put, like, if you have Haksabanovic, Nathan Holland, Nathan Trott, Connor Coventry, Amadou Diallo, even Dan Chesters is going to get a new contract and hopefully sign. He's actually got a good agent, so he's one of the better ones. You put Elise, who else is there that I've missed? Akinwa, whatever his name is, I've forgotten his name, but there's quite a few academy players. Out of all of the academy players, what Jeremy's on now is very, very minimal, because he's on a third-year scholarship contract, I think. So his basic wage right now is less than what me and you would probably earn a week, I think. But his contract that he's been offered would only put him probably maybe sixth, seventh out of those players. And if you think about it, he's had more of an impact in the first team than any of them, certainly this season. And so in that respect, if you compare the players like for like, he should be the highest paid young player behind Declan Rice, because none of the others really have featured in the first team, not consistently anyway, have they?
No.
So
and that's what I was, before I was rudely interrupted, I was I was going to go on to make a very similar point. So, you know, where I sit on that, now that I know that kind of information, is I think it's an absolute piss take of West Ham, to be quite honest with you, because you're talking about those under-23 players and where he ranks in them. Those under-23 players that you've mentioned, none of them, granted, haven't been given an opportunity, but none of them have made an impact at West Ham whatsoever. Now, either he's part of the squad or he isn't. He's come in and arguably at times been one of our best players. But the problem that you've got is his agent will no doubt be behind closed doors making every club aware of this situation.
100% he has, I'm sure.
There you go. So at what point, let's say for example, Chelsea say to this agent, yeah, do you know what, we'll take him for nothing and we'll give him 15-20 grand a week, no problem. West Ham would have long this out to a point where Jeremy now has a better option and he thinks, fuck it, even if West Ham now offer me 20 grand, I don't want it because I've got a better opportunity. Now, as it currently stands, maybe he doesn't. But the problem you've got is, I'd half understand that from West Ham's perspective, if he's played four games and he's banging on the door saying, I want 35 grand a week. But if we're saying, and from what you're saying, it's in the region of, and these are my words, not yours, in the region of 6 to 8 grand a week.
Let me just clarify. That would be a basic wage, but then he would get bonuses. So he would get a match bonus and appearance bonus and stuff. Now, from limited knowledge, I think a match bonus is over 10 grand. So effectively, and I think he can get, obviously, contributions as well within that. So effectively, he could earn, if you include bonuses, assuming he's selected, he could earn about 25,000 a week if, like, the bonuses and so on come into play. But it's
I know this probably isn't the right way to think about this as a player, because as a professional and someone that's competitive, you should thrive on this, not be put off by it. But at the same time, he knows Ryan Fredericks is at the club. He knows that
Ben Johnson,
we still want to make a player of Ryan Fredericks, especially because he was our number one choice right back. All right, Zabba's moving on, but then he'll also be looking at, well, hang on, West Ham, how much do you want to invest in me? You call yourselves the Academy of Football. I could potentially sign a 5 to 6 year contract here if you pay me the right amount of money. Now, the right amount of money that he's asking for sounds to me like the sort of money I would expect a lower league championship club to pay one of their players. This is a Premier League footballer who has seen West Ham United sign Carlos fucking Sanchez for 100 grand a week, who's 33. If you're Jeremy Ngakoue, you're like, well, do you buy into me as much as I want to buy into this football club? Will you make it worth my while to stay here? Or if I continue to impress, do you want me knocking on the door saying, right, I'm smashing it at the moment. I've done it for the last 6 months, but now I've got interest. So why should I be loyal to you when you wasn't loyal to me when it came to the contract negotiations? Either that or we'll lose him, X. And the agent will do the work and he'll fuck off somewhere else for double the money that we're offering.
Well, yeah, and I mean, let's take it from the figure that's been reported in the press. Okay, I don't think it is this much, but that he wants. But let's just say I'm wrong and they're right. Right, so the player wants 20 grand a week. Would you offer him 20 grand a week, bearing in mind what you've just said about Sanchez and the fact that he has only played four games, take into account sort of both factors? Would you say 20 grand a week is an acceptable wage for him?
I would say, I'll pay you. I would pay it to him 100%, because to me, a Premier League player, that's not a lot of money. And you're talking about someone who could potentially have a big future in the game. And we all, as fans, have seen him and like the look of him. So I think 20 grand, I'd want to try and pin him to a 5 or 6 year deal for that. I wouldn't want to put him on a 12 month contract at 20 grand, but 100% I'd pay him that. Million percent. Well, I'm not being funny. I think he's in those four games, He's arguably been, you know, the first choice in the fans' eyes over Ryan Fredericks when he's fully fit. How much is Ryan on?
Yeah, well, Ryan's on about 50 grand a week. I would say that I if I was to pick West Ham's team tomorrow, I'd put Ngakoue ahead of Fredericks in my selection. The thing is as well, which is quite funny about this, is that West Ham were trying to get rid of Ngakoue before he burst onto the scene. So before he'd played those four games for us, he was like probably on his way out. The club weren't sure whether they rated him, whether he had the intelligence to play at a high level in terms of his positional play and so on. But it obviously turns out he played those four games and did really well. I mean, what were the games? From memory, it was the two against Liverpool. We played against Southampton, didn't he, in the win? And what, it must have been Arsenal, I guess, maybe, was the last one. And he played well in all of those. And I think 20 grand is a lot for someone that's only played four games. But you've got to take, like you said, you've got to look at it from, is he going to be our right back next season? Ben Johnson is meant to be better. Because so then you could argue that Ben Johnson would deserve that amount of money. I think anything like 10,000, which would still be a lot for someone his age, but it would be a good, it would be not as much as like Oxford on 20 grand, for example, and Haksabanovic is on more than that, I think. If you gave him 10 grand and you said to him, right, you've got 10 grand basic and you've got this much per gate, like being in the squad, this much if you start, this much if you like, I don't know, get man of the match or whatever. And I think that would be a fair way to do it. But
possibly. Yeah. But I just think the sort of money we're talking about at Premier League level is so trivial. If we'd been relegated, and who knows, maybe we will be. But if we was in a championship and we are literally cutting back every penny we can, I'd half understand what you're saying. But Philip Anderson hasn't turned up all season. He's picking up 150 grand a fucking week. You know, by the sounds of things, it looks like the club are angling more towards a 2 grand fucking basic wage for Jeremy with the promise of maybe, you know, bumping it up to 2025 if he plays. But the fact of the matter is, he's done well, but he's still cutting his teeth. But is he going to be cutting his teeth on the bench when Ryan Fredericks is fit? And if that's the case, from a personal perspective, he would then be picking up 2 grand a week, watching fellow professionals not performing as consistently as he has on 100 times the amount of fucking money.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. And I think, you know, you've got to think, even if you take Declan Rice, for example.
Similar situation then
and even now. I mean, his contract's been massively improved, but compared to what, I mean, he earns less than half what Jack Wilshere earns, I think. And you compare the contribution of Jack Wilshere to West Ham or to Declan Rice in the last few years, and it's not even comparable, really, is
it? I mean, another thing I'd say as well is that at the end of this season, Zabba's leaving, isn't he?
Yeah.
Now, Ngakia wasn't even spoke about, you know, in the most part of when Zabaleta has been at the football club. But now he has been. So actually, we might have been looking for a backup right back when Zabba left before we knew Jeremy was going to come on the scene. So now, you know, if that was the case, you'd lose Zabba and you might save 50, 60 grand a week, whatever he was on. But then you're going to have to go to the transfer market and maybe spend 5, 10, 15 million pound on a transfer fee alone to get that backup right back, and then pay him probably 20, 30, 40 grand a week. So why not save yourself the transfer fee and give this kid fucking 10 grand a week? It's nothing.
Yeah, I agree. And I think actually going forward, I would look to sell Fredericks, I think. I know that's controversial, but I think I would. And I would say to Ben Johnson and Ngakia, right, you're both young lads, you've both come from the academy, fight it out for that right back position. And I think potentially you could unearth yourself a right back or two right backs for the next 10, 15 years at West Ham if they turn out to be semi-decent. And if they don't, well then, you know, they'll be able to hold their own until January. I'd imagine you'd be able to get someone in then. That's what I would do anyway.
No, I think that would be leaving us vulnerable in the fullback areas. I mean, I still think Creswell, in my opinion, I think he shot his bolt.
Oh, no, I'm not talking about left back.
No, but I'm summing it up collectively. Like, if you look for me, I think Creswell shot his bolt and Alpha Mazuaku isn't a left back, right?
Yeah, so I would buy a left back.
Right, yeah, so you buy a left back. But
I would buy a right back.
But what I'm saying is, if you then switch to the right back area, Jeremy has done very well, but I haven't seen enough of him to say, if this kid goes on a run of 3 or 4 bad games, his head ain't going to completely drop and he'll go missing for the rest of his career. I don't know the answer to that because I haven't seen enough of him. Ben Johnson, I've seen him play once. So what I'm saying to you is, I think if you then look at making them two, who are kids really, still cutting their teeth, fight it out between themselves as to who gets that right back spot, and you've got that continuing problem at left back, half your defence is an issue. So I'd rather, I mean, Fredericks, I feel like I want to give him another season, if I'm honest, but I do think that, I don't know, Jeremy's got to continue being consistent, but he's got to be paid for his efforts to try and get there, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, another youngster that's probably going to leave as well, who hasn't signed a deal, is Vernon Parks. He's been attracting interest from both Celtic and Rangers, funnily. I'm not sure he's as highly rated as the previous ones that I've mentioned, as in Ngakia or Baker Boati, but he is also looking likely to leave too. So it does concern me a little bit why our academy players are all sort of looking to leave, because not all of them are, but that they consider it, because, you know, Conor Coventry didn't want to leave, but it was a consideration at one point. Diallo was the same. Rice, I don't think he ever was close to leaving, but it was certainly, he was getting frustrated with his contract situation. Maybe as a club, we don't recognise our youth as well as we should do, and because of Reece Oxford, and the club still feel burned by the fact that he got a 20 grand contract and then didn't do anything for the next 2-3 years. Maybe we're living off the ghost of that still, probably.
No, which is a massive mistake. I mean, one thing you cannot do is set your bar moving forward when it comes to contractual negotiations based around a 20-year-old Reece Oxford. Yes, in hindsight, it was a mistake giving him that money, but we're not talking about giving a player that money. We're talking about giving Reece Oxford that money, and Reece Oxford with the agent that he had. Now, that was a mistake in that scenario. It doesn't mean to say you're going to get your fingers burnt by every single kid that you invest into. You know, Jeremy Ngakia is probably a completely different person and would have nothing but respect for the football club for paying him what he wants, and in return will give his heart and soul for that football club. You can't tar every kid with the same brush and think that they're going to go off the rails because, you know, in 20 years' time we're still doing it because we're looking back on what happened with Reece Oxford fucking 2 decades ago. It's madness.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And I just think as well, like you said, with the way of the football world at the moment, everything is such a gamble. Why gamble that we, like, by letting Jeremy go, who could turn out to be, you know, an England international or whatever, and also then have to try and replace him with someone who we don't know much about? The football world's all over the place at the moment. I'd much rather use our academy than bring in randoms. That, like, you know, of course we need to bring in, but like Gerard Bowen was a great signing, for example, but I'd much rather go down that route now, which Moyes has talked about, as in either proven players in England, or try to see whether some of our academy are good enough now. I know most of the academy players have gone on that haven't played and proved to be that we made the right decision. Like, it's very rare that we've let go of a youngster who's come back to bite us. I mean,
I can't think of any off the top of my head.
No, I mean, I think the only one I can think of that's actually in the Premier League but he hasn't really come back to bite us is Stanislas. And I mean, that,
I don't think he ever would have got into our side since he left.
No, exactly. So this is what I mean. So, you know, people used to say for Elliot Lee to come in the side, you know, he's struggling a bit at Luton. George Moncur, I think he might also be at Luton. And sort of all these players have never really, Marcus Brown, you know, ended up going to Middlesbrough and then back to Oxford. So I think we've not, so far it's not like we've massively underestimated players in our academy, but Ngakia did prove that he had four good games for us, and yes, it's only four, but it's still better than nothing. So I think we should at least try and see how good this guy is, and not before, you know, before he goes. Do you know what I mean?
And yeah, 100%. And you also have to put this into perspective as well, because, you know, this is a bit of an unfortunate situation for both parties, in a sense that if Jeremy had 3 years left on his contract and was knocking on the door and gently asking for a pay rise, you know, I think the whole situation would be a little bit more relaxed. But because he's come in and done so well and he's now potentially going to be walking out the door in a month's time because his contract is going to expire, it's a shit or bust scenario. You either look at him and say, do you know what, I'm going to take a punt. I'm going to take a punt and give this kid the money he wants because I've been impressed with him. And off the pitch, all the reports I'm getting from the academy coaches are brilliant. I like his attitude and I think he's got a future at this football club. And do you know what? That gamble isn't a 50, 60 grand gamble. It's potentially around £8,000 to £10,000 a fucking week gamble. It's 10% of what Jack Wilshere earns, and he's barely kicked a fucking football for us. So it's not a gamble in my eyes. It is for the football club, but for me, 10 grand a week is an absolute no-brainer.
Yeah, no, I do agree with you, and it's sad again that this sort of stuff has to come out in the press. I like that we're struggling. I just don't think it creates the best impression for our youngsters that, or players, young players that are potentially going to join West Ham, that that we're fighting over maybe giving them the right contracts. I just think it's bad news that this story, you know, that it's known. And I think it'd be just really good if West Ham just went, boom, right, yeah, you've got him signed up for the next 5 years. We could do with some positivity going into these next fixtures anyway. If the season does restart, it'd be a big boost. Just to say, right, yeah, Ngakia's got a new deal going forward. We're kicking off boom, with this team. Just a bit of positivity, because there's been nothing recently. So, yeah.
No, I make you right, mate. So, you know, like I say, before your section tonight, I didn't know what I know now, but now I feel quite strongly that we've just got to get this done.
Yeah,
you know, and the thing is, I think people on social media, listen, I don't know Jeremy. He could be the biggest prick going. I don't know him. I've never met him before in my life, never had a conversation with him. But assuming he isn't, people on social media, I think, have got to stop having a pop at him when, A, they don't know the facts, and, B, they are probably, either consciously or subconsciously, instantly making that comparison between him and Reece Oxford. Can't do it. We've got to forget about Reece Oxford. Forget that kid ever even existed. Because if we are ever going to make financial judgments moving forward, for Christ's sake, don't make it on the fact that once upon a time we gave a 20 grand contract to the wrong kid with the wrong agent.
Yeah, exactly. No, I agree with you, definitely.
Is there anything else, pal?
No, that's it, boss.
Okay, that is the end of the show. A big thank you to Ian Dowie for coming on. And as always, thanks to you guys for listening. And that includes Addy Chard, a lifelong West Ham fan who celebrated his 40th birthday this week. So many happy returns to you, mate. Look after yourselves, everyone. And until next week, come on, you Irons.
The share it with a friend deal. Even if that friend is yourself. Your McDonald's, your rules.
Live your best morning with BOGO breakfast sandwiches only on the McDonald's app. Now buy one bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles or sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles and get a second one free. Valid for item of equal or lesser value. Limited time only at participating McDonald's. Valid one per day. Excludes $1-$3 menu. Visit McDonald's app for details. Download and registration required.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Bundling home and car insurance with GEICO is so easy, your neighbors are probably already doing it. But who? They may drop little hints like,
beautiful day out. Even more beautiful since we saved by bundling our home and car insurance with GEICO.
Or,
yard work is hard. Much harder than bundling with GEICO, which was easy.
Or it may be even subtler, like,
speaking of burgers, we bundled our home and car insurance with GEICO and saved a bunch of money.
Bundling is easy with GEICO. Just ask your neighbors.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.